Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Plus minus.
Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit there.
Plus minus.
Curry driving again. Good! Oh, you're kidding me!
Tell Marcus that he asked that question about my defense. You hear that, Marcus?
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. Y'all have a great night.
I think you got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome to Warriors Plus Minus. We got the gang here together.
Marcus, you have your coffee? You have your coffee? You got it?
I do.
What's the order? What's the order?
Man, I needed a latte. I didn't have any more coffee pods for my machine.
We might have been waiting for Marcus to go out and get a cup of coffee.
Did you guys hire a replacement?
We offered major money to a replacement, and she declined. She's got too many other things to be doing. Sharon,
facts,
Sharon,
right?
Thompson, Marcus' daughter, was sitting in kindly, letting us wait for her father to go out and get a cup of coffee.
She's currently studying for a role in Chicago. They're doing the Chicago play. She doesn't have time for
She could have come
podcast.
On and sung for us. It'd be great.
She thought Steph should be on the ball more. Hilarious.
It's hilarious. Speaking of on-ball Steph, Steve Kerr basically called him a point guard last night. How about that?
Well, he needs to be.
He said, hey, Steph was orchestrating the show.
No Draymond, and someone's got to do it. And I think Steph was quite happy doing it. You know, hey, if you got Clay on the court, you can't have like everybody off the ball, right? I mean, you got to have somebody on the ball. And
somebody's got to be on the ball, right?
Steph, yeah. And you know, against Detroit, does it really even matter? Obviously, we can discuss that, but offense was pretty good last night. I mean, definitely.
Yo, we're not gonna gloss over that, by the way. The way they've been, you got to take the good offensive games when you get them. You know,
well,
what I'm saying?
By the way, it didn't end well. They scored like 17 and 18 in the third and fourth, but 66 in the first half. It didn't look good in Minnesota without him. It was no Steph, no Draymond. And like Jordan Poole was kind of playing point guard. They didn't want to play Chioza. I remember in Memphis when Draymond was originally out, they put JTA in because they believe he can kind of do some of the Draymond stuff. But it's just like,
that didn't last,
yeah, he's turning the ball over like crazy. And he's basically fringe of the rotation right now. So if they're going to play Kuminga, if they're going to play Gary Payton the second at the four spot, he's got to be the point guard because...
Yeah, and Andre's not playing very much. I think that would be another sort of option, maybe less so this season.
So y'all saying this ain't because Steve Kerr read my...
Oh, yeah. Marcus, what a great point. This is... I got to do exactly what you say. Like, how many times has he ever done that, MD, by the way? He usually goes to the exact...
How many times has he heard the same point?
Probably like, I don't even need to read this. Like, I know exactly what he said.
More pick and rolls, you say? I've never heard of this concept.
Yeah. Curry with the ball. Curry take his man. Oh, that's really... it's interesting that Marcus would think that. That would be so shocking.
What? How revelatory.
I just like it with Slater. But like, there's this discussion out there about on-ball, off-ball. maybe in one spot. Steph, what do you think about this discussion about, you know, on-ball, off-ball? It's Marcus is a one-man theme. One-man meme, as they say.
I'm here for the people.
I think why he's doing it mostly is because it allows them to play lineups he wants to play. Because Peyton's more impactful and Kuminga's more impactful.
Absolutely.
Like these are the guys they need to play. Even if like JTA brings a more Steve Kerr like vibe to the game, they got to play the other guys right now.
I feel like we kind of gloss over it, but when he wasn't doing it, he was getting destroyed for it. But like Steve is doing stuff like that now, like kind of violating his own little set thing, you know, his set ways. Like, you know, he's putting out lineups that he just... Some of them are wild, right? But some of them are like, this is him getting out of his own comfort zone.
Ones?
Oh, yeah, man. Well, that Minnesota game was crazy.
Kuminga was like at the two at times.
Yeah. I think some of it is like, he's just got to figure out who the best five players are at some point, you know, and just play those guys. And not just five, but, you know, each unit has to go on. But you can't just go, okay, this is the way we play and we move. And, like, no, you just got to get the best five players on the floor. And I think that's, of course, the name I'm going to bring up, Jonathan Kuminga. Clearly, when there are injuries, he's a guy you got
to play. Man, you newcomer to Kuminga.
Yeah, just on the Kuminga bandwagon.
It was a conversation. I think it was a question you asked pregame last night. It might have been postgame. But I think part of the rotation issues right now, he called it awkwardness. He was like, Klay Thompson has to play his minutes, but he wants to play Klay Thompson to start and close the half. And that's just like, it's odd to have a 20-minute per night player that's a starter and a closer.
And you have the huge space in between. Yeah, I mean, and just try to mix within that. But I think Kerr wants to get that Steph, Klay, Wiggins group, like, let them really gel, like, let that thing, that's how they, you know, again, strength numbers and all those other things, but what did they beat people with? Steph, Klay, Draymond, and then KD. Like, that's how they used to beat people. It's not try to filter it through. Remember, were they gonna split Curry and Draymond's minutes, I mean, Curry and Durant's minutes? Remember, then let's just play them together. Like, that's just, let's just kill people with those guys and then patch it together everywhere else. And I think they might be coming to that. And they're trying to see if Kuminga works with that. And then what I asked Kerr about, like, Kuminga as a small five, because he really hasn't played him like that. He goes, well, he is, but he's when it's with Draymond. Like, it's like you could just see how this is beginning to click in, like how they're going to get, or they're going to try to work toward just getting their best five players. Play their best five players, let them destroy everyone else, and then you kind of fiddle around with everything else in the middle there.
The reason I don't think he's, like, ready to play Kuminga as a small ball five, even if, like, you know, 4 years from now, that might be Kuminga's best position, is like the center's most important job is defense, and not even just defense, but like back line. You're the eyes and ears, you know, you're Kevon Looney. You're knowing how to read pick and roll action and knowing what the coverage is. And you're telling your guard what to do. Kuminga defensively right now is an on ball, like, harasser, and he don't know what else is going on. If he's in team defense, he's floating around. He doesn't know rotations. I mean, understandable. We knew this coming in. I mean, they've been, like, really, like, electrified by what he can do if you put him on a, you know, a scorer. But you don't want him as the eyes and ears of the defense, because then you have a teenager doing that.
That's why you have Draymond with him, right? That's because Draymond will do it for everybody. That all makes sense. I'm just saying that's where the minutes are. I've said it on and on. I don't think that's his ideal position. I think he's a great 3-4, can do anything, and then even slide to help you switch onto the five. But you don't play in the five. I'm just saying it would be where to get him minutes. It's where they figured out how to get Pascal minutes last season when there was no other place to get him. It's just those are the minutes, right? Those are free minutes, because you just to take down Bielitsa's minutes isn't going to cause any problems whatsoever. In fact, it'll probably help you. And I get it. I get why Draymond's you pair him with Draymond. You just let them both be 4-5s and you let them terrorize. And, you know, you put him out there with Wiggins and Klay, you know, like, that's a nice active team, but it probably does predicate on Draymond being out there, being able to lead everybody. You know, that voice carries, and that way you can play him with a 19-year-old. I get it, but you could just see how things are piecing together, how they're going to get to their best five, their middle five, their closing five, all these things, and we know the way Steve usually thinks, and I think this is kind of where it's headed.
The interesting part was that he did it with Porter. He was saying essentially he's playing some five because, like, he wants the forward five to be interchangeable, but he wants that with Draymond. But then he did it with Otto Porter, and it wasn't, you know, I mean, obviously it's the Pistons, so you can't really make a conclusion about it, but you could see him maybe trying to build that up, like, where he can do that role, right? Like, he can get there eventually. I feel like he's going to get there sooner than they think. I feel like he might be ready. I just don't know how you keep running Bielitsa out there.
With Kuminga, Marcus is like texting me this, and I'm like going, but that's not the minutes they're playing Kuminga. That's why, they have to adjust Kuminga's role, because the whole idea is just get the best players on the floor. I mean, and then you figure it out from there. You can have your system. You can have your, you know, everything you want to do. And yes, be patient, 19-year-old, all those things. But those are the minutes that are available. Those are like 3 minutes right now, until, you know, with Wiseman. But, you know, I think we're all thinking maybe Wiseman isn't going to have a role this season. We'll see. But they have to make some mental adjustments if that is where he gets the bulk of his minutes. It's not a huge adjustment, but it's something of an adjustment.
they've found a role for him right now, though. He's the starting power forward for the foreseeable future. Like, you know, we don't know, like, when's Draymond going to be back? I mean, you know, at least he's missing at least the entire homestand. So I think broader than this, like, you know, down the line, I think we all think Bielitsa's minutes are the most vulnerable. But Jonathan Kuminga over the next few weeks has to, like, win a consistent rotation spot. To me, that's what this next few weeks is about. Starting,
this is his turn.
You know, Steve Kerr kind of crowned him last night. Like, I was kind of surprised.
That was odd. I was stunned by that.
Kerr's public messaging on Kuminga lately has been very interesting. I mean, like, openly kind of like, you know, telling us how upset they've been with the fact that he's not running the floor. I mean, the G League issue, which, you know, maybe as we rewrite the Kuminga story a year from now, that's like the turning point for him. But not being happy there. Every time I was walking into shoot arounds on the road, he's sitting there. You don't see this a lot. Kerr sitting with a player going over film. Usually it's, you know, Jama or Chris DeMarco or one of the other assistants. It's been a lot of Steve Kerr working directly with Kuminga. And it's interesting. I mean, you mentioned Kerr's adaption early on. He's admitted he's kind of a young coach, particularly when it comes to like young talent. They failed in a lot of ways with James Wiseman last year. I think they're doing stuff different with Kuminga, and it seems to be kind of working.
He gets the benefit of the second child, huh? Where you mess up with the first kid.
And... and I think he might be, you know, I don't want to make too much of a comparison, but he might be somebody who absorbs this stuff better, right? I mean, they clearly don't think Wiseman is somebody who wants to hear constant criticism. They clearly stay away from that. Wiseman is always propped up. He's always, like, praised. He's always like, they don't say he shouldn't do this. You should, like, they're in the locker room and the coaching staff, they put Wiseman kind of to the side. Kuminga is like, yeah, it's fair game, you know. And I think that's part of the respect they have for him. Like, they see the game here. Like, this is playable. Like, this is something that could really work right now when he's 19 years old in a limited way on this championship seeking team. But they just need it to be a little more focused. Like, they just need a little bit here. Just do this and you're fine. And then everything else will come, right? With Kuminga, you see everything else happening. But make sure you do this one thing, run, and don't get distracted on defense. And don't reach on everything. You just do those two things. It's not like that's all you're going to do. With Kuminga, there's going to be the dunks. There's going to be the, you know, dribble handoff fake, you know, two dribbles, bam. I mean, there's going to be that stuff. So I just think it's maybe the different personalities. And yes, with Wiseman. But also, this is a guy... Like, you couldn't just say, Wiseman, go guard, you know, the best guard. Go guard John Morant. You could never say that. With Kuminga, you could say, just go do it. That's what you do. Go do it, and you can help us. You can help us in the playoffs doing that. I just think that's a little difference, a difference in the year, difference in the temperament. But his skill set, and you know, I think Wiseman is really, really talented, really unique player. But Kuminga's skill set is just so much more varied. And can help them in so many. Look, we're talking about him as a small ball five.
I'm so glad you finally see this about Kuminga.
Finally see the light on Jonathan Kuminga. My goodness. You couldn't get me to talk about it before. Now.
I'm so happy. Man,
yeah, now people on Twitter are going to believe this too, by the way. They're accusing me.
Just
of not
block
being
them, Tim. Just block them.
I think I will.
To me, like you said, the ability to put him on a perimeter player, just be like, yo, go do this one thing. That's like, yo, that is like a game changer as far as you can play right now. The other thing is he moves well with Steph. Like, they have a nice little sync already. And I do think Steph, after years of playing with Zaza and Kevon Looney, likes a dude who can just like catch it and explode. Like, catch, go up, right? And if you can do that, I mean, believe it or not, there's not a lot of people who can be who have thrived on the finishing end with Steph, right? Like, I mean, Bielitsa's pump faking out of the shots.
Bielitsa and Wiseman taking strays in this episode.
I know, right?
Not even
but
really straight.
He can come
even,
on.
I think this is being lined up.
No, these are direct hits, baby. These are direct.
He also is passing well to Steph. He probably has 4 assists to Steph the last few games, yeah.
They have a nice little chemistry.
Because he's good at using open spaces. He's incredible at that. That's what he's great at. And that's what Steph creates. And I think that's part of the frustration is you have Steph. You're playing these janky defenses. There's open lanes all over the place. And some of these guys are not taking advantage. But it was 4, 5, 6 games, whatever. It's not the whole season. But that's the frustration. And that's what I keep saying is that Kuminga can actually help fix that. That's what I've been saying. Also, like, there's a thing. There's a unique thing here. Two guys chase Steph all the way around the court, even when he doesn't have the ball. Pass it to be mean, you pass it to JTA or you pass it to Gary Payton. They catch the ball and you don't know what's going to happen. You throw it to Kuminga and he's got an angle on his guy because the guy's looking at Steph. He's going to take a dribble and dunk it or get fouled or do something interesting.
Like JTA is going to take a dribble and then he's going to look to pass
yes,
it. Right?
And yeah. Iguodala's the same. Draymond to some extent, although he's gotten better at finishing. Like these guys don't look to just but they can't, you know, it's a physical thing. I'm not criticizing them. It's just a physical thing. Kuminga can turn the corner or try to turn the corner on anybody. And they just haven't had that. They don't, it's a unique skill. There aren't many guys like that, especially your 6'8". This is what he can do. And that's why, I mean, Kerr's even saying it. It's like, he wants him with Steph and Clay. This is part of this. Like, I want to see them together because this is a guy, Wiggins sort of can do it. Not really. Kuminga can really do it. And
what he would, can yeah. do it. He doesn't.
He doesn't, like, yeah, you know, maybe, the, you know, Wiggins is fine. I mean, we're just not trying. He's just not that guy. Again, there's like seven of those guys in the league. Kuminga might be one of them, and that would be such an enormous thing.
You know, he's hitting threes lately, which I think has been kind of undertold. He was 2-4.
He's up to 30%.
He was 2-4 last night.
I don't think they want to praise him about that, because they don't want him to start putting up five a game.
Yeah, well, like, look, I think four games okay. Look, you know, when he goes up for three lately, I've been like, that might go in, you know, and that's better than I was thinking a month ago. But yeah, they want him at, you know, 1-4, 2-4, not, you know, 2-9. So you're right. I don't think Steve Kerr is going to come out like, let it fly.
I love the way that 3-point shot is looking from JK. No,
I don't want to see it after I see him. Like, to me, I think he should do the Bielitsa thing more often. Fake while the guy's coming at you and take off, because he can take off, man.
The Bielitsa thing.
There was one driving. Yeah, Bielitsa fakes and then drives, and then he turned it over instead of just shooting.
Yeah, I said that last part. They don't want him to do that last. Yeah, they don't want him to do that last part. Although he does that last part sometimes too, though. He does
turn it over. Absolutely. But like, there was a drive in Minnesota where I'm like, this dude is giving me, you know, Amari Stoudemire vibes, where he just like, it's one dribble and I'm not even caring who's there. Like, I'm just going to try to dunk that thing. They could do something with
Here's something I'm sort of beginning. I'm not going to go overboard with it, but, you know, we talk about the gravity of Steph and everybody. That's why these, you know, you get these wide open dunks for Looney, JTA, or whoever. I'm kind of seeing defenses not doing that when it's Kuminga involved in the action. Like, they're like, you want to get that guy thrown down on your head? Like, I'm not saying they're ignoring Steph. They clearly are, like, jumping at Steph. I'm saying they're also thinking about, this young kid's going to put me on a poster. He's going to put my head through the rim. So that's the stuff they kind of need. Again, Kuminga's going to make errors.
Which is also why they're excited about Wiseman.
Right? No question. That's a whole other thing. But, like, Kuminga can do it with the ball in his hands. Like, you know, he can do it in a pick-and-roll action. He can do it, like, making decisions.
I don't know, TK. I think they feel they do the same when it's Looney.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, make it get the ball dribbled around. Yeah,
right? They're like, nah, let's cover this guy because he might.
Top 10 NBA rebounder, Kevon Looney.
Marcus is going to the game like, oh, yeah, Clay should have just passed to Looney there. He was open. I go, what are you talking about? Clay with the ball or Looney with the ball?
Clay's got the ball. There's two defenders jumping at him, and Looney's got a wide open lane to the basket. You dump it down, you know, and Looney gets the dunk. Like,
automatic dunk there. No question. Wouldn't get blocked and pump faked and. No, I think that's, again, Looney and these guys, not trying to credit, they do really valuable things for this team. It's just a different thing that is perfectly suited to fit with
consider the option. Like, you got to consider, it's a read and react, but there was no read for you. You were just like, yeah, no. I'm like, dude, he's wide open. That's a no. Nope. Clay.
I'll take Clay taking a shot. Every single time.
So Slater, Clay had a moment. Clay had a moment. He hit a couple of shots. He hit his corner three. He said he felt like
the pump fake sidestep three. That's the
pump fake sidestep. He felt so good. He walked all the way to the other end of the court to celebrate with the crowd.
That was interesting. Yeah, that was.
I was like, was it somebody over there? Was
he is like perpetually in his feelings now? Is like it's the 2 years off. I think understandably, but like they've like
Clay is an emo rapper now.
Awoken emotions within him on a like moment by moment basis. I mean, you can see it in the press conferences.
He's listening to Drake every game.
He took a little snap at Slater last night. But also, I think it was illustrative of like what he feels. Like Slater's asking him, "What's, you know, what was it like? What's getting you out of your rhythm? Is it your legs? You know, when you're shooting?" And he's like, "Torn ACL, torn Achilles, rehabbing for 2 years." But that's the fiery competitive Clay. That's the stuff that when people talk about the Zen Clay and the boat Clay, whatever, Captain Clay, like this guy's a competitor. Like this guy just wants to beat somebody's ass, you know, shooting the ball. That's what he wants to do. So we're seeing parts of that in these press conferences, in these moments.
Yeah, and I don't know how much of it's like this NBA 75. I think that's just something he found to motivate him. But like now, even, you know, as Marcus, you were talking or asking him about, you know, dribbling and stuff like that, and he's like, every great at my position was a three level score. He's like, come back with this, like, you can tell he's really obsessed with like proving to the world, like, no, I am in the Dwayne Wade category, I am in the, you know, Kobe Bryant, like, you know, best two guards to ever live type category. And that's like seeping into his game. I'm not sure that's like fantastic for the Warriors offense, who, you know, it's funny with Clay, like, we, I think, all talked about how, well, this will be seamless transition when he gets back because he doesn't dribble, and he, you know, he's Clay. He's just going to kind of, you know, he's obviously he's obviously going to space the floor, and he's going to play hard defense. So like, how can that affect a team's issue? But he's chucking, and I keep thinking more and more like, yeah, remember how much like Durant would get mad at Clay? Like Clay would take like 8 shots in a 5-minute period, and Durant would be sitting there like, oh, is this guy going to pass? I think we forgot about that. And while Clay has looked good, he is going to help this team. I think it's impacted Poole and Wiggins and some others. I mean, he's taking some food off everybody's plate. Curry, too.
There is this limbo period where it's like, you got to let Clay kind of do his thing. Like, let him kind of get the feel again, which includes not dumping the ball to the wide open Looney. But those are the things that he's going to have to do, right? Like, he's coming off picks and he's not moving the ball. He's just shooting it. Nobody's to the point yet where it's like, yo, Clay, I'm open. Like, how do you say that to Clay right now? But eventually, he's going to have to be inside the offense, right? And working as a part of the offense. They've got to get to that. But what's interesting about it, you know, I think I'm going to write about this, is his role is just going to be different now. Like, it isn't the catch and shoot guy. It isn't completely a finisher. He's dribbling more than he's ever dribbled. He's nonstop dribbling. Like, he's James Harden dribbling. Like, that really wasn't Clay's thing, right? Like, I mean, even his dunk was a crossover. Like,
do you think that is a good thing? I mean, I think he believes he's flashing more of what he can't, you know, yeah, has always been.
But I think if the defense is overplaying,
I mean, what's the better option on his team, by the way? Like,
well, and by the way, he hasn't played a significant minute with Draymond, right? I mean, he's played that one minute when Draymond started the game, Clay's first game, and foul.
We won't count that, so, Tim. I think.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, some of this action isn't going to be the same action when Draymond's at the top, right? We know that. And so they need other initiators, and however much Marcus is going to say it has to be Steph, like, they can't just be Steph. They need other initiators when it's not Draymond. And Clay's, it just, you know, he just gets to Clay at some point. There's 10 seconds on the shot clock, and Clay's got the ball in the corner. I'm sorry, at the wing, and like, it's take 3 dribbles and see what's there. Now, did they want him to take 5 dribbles and see what's there? No, but like, let's see what it is with Draymond. Let's see what it is when Clay is all the way back, when he's playing 7 minutes at a time instead of 4 minutes at a time, 5 minutes at a time. But yeah, he's dribbling a little more. It might be good. It's probably going to be good. He can't do it every single time. You know, he's not John Morant. He's not going to do it like that. But I think it's good. I think, you know, show something else. I just don't think he can do the same stuff physically off, you know, off the pick. He just can't fling his body in the air and throw it. That's not him anymore. He's going to have to settle.
Yeah. He's pump faking those a lot,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's, when got,
you see him,
yeah,
he's got a set. He's not, yeah, going
he,
straight,
yeah,
up.
Because he's just not, he doesn't have, of course he's not going to have the same quick twitch. It's just not going to be the exact same. And it might get there. I think it's heading that shot at the end of the half certainly led us, you know, something we hadn't really seen. You know, the pump fake slide step left is just like, how many guys in the world can do it? Steph, Clay, and, you know, Harden, and, you know, not many,
like,
other
Booker.
Yeah, many, yeah. Booker, I'm not 100% sure. Like, it's really hard. So we'll see. But yeah, without that quick twitch, he's going to have to pump fake take two dribbles, see, you know, try to move the defense a little, get a bump, get a foul. Like, he's trying to get fouled now. Like you said, like, he's like actively absorbing contact to get fouled. Really hadn't seen that in this game. And let's see what it is when Draymond's back.
You know his usage rate right now?
Pretty high, I would guess.
32.5.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's high for that's
yeah,
high
that for him. Is I'm looking at the league. Well, I'm looking at the high. League leaders right now. Joel Embiid, Luka Doncic, Giannis, Trae Young, Paul George, Klay Thompson.
Like 35s or what's
league? Yeah, league? Embiid's 35. Yeah. But Klay would be, you know, obviously it's way
but like
fewer
what Steph's
games.
Like career high is like 33, right? Something like that.
Klay so, is yeah. currently like right ahead of, you know, and again, like he's played 5 and these other guys have played 40, but he's currently right ahead of Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, Devin Booker.
24-8.
Yeah, this is way high for him. Way.
He's never been a 30% usage guy.
I mean, look, again, like Marcus said, we're in this like, you know, I guess gap period where Klay is just like obviously everything's super positive around him and they're kind of letting him like, you know, get back into rhythm, especially in these minimal minutes. It's like, sure, Jack, no Draymond, but it's impacting Jordan Poole. I mean, like it just is. Jordan Poole is just much better when he's allowed to start or, you know, he's just being minimized. It's just something to notice because, I mean, how many of these podcasts have we done 20-minute segments on Jordan Poole because he was such a massive part of what they're doing. He's no longer a massive part right now.
Well, that's the interesting part about Klay potentially having a different role in the offense as a creator and not a finisher, which means somebody else has to be the finisher if he's the creator, right? Like that's so if they're starting to play with him on the wing, making something happen, then that means he's not the one standing in the corner, like, you know, preventing the defense from collapsing. So then who is, right? And that's just a completely different role for somebody else. And I do think when he left, he was getting more towards that role because remember, KD was hurt at the end of the year. There was a stretch. Remember, it was like a stretch towards the end of the last 2 years where either Steph was out or KD was out and he had to be more of a creative role. And he felt like he was becoming, you know, his best self, right? He felt like, yo,
an
I'm taking
all-time
over
great two guard, and we can yeah, all yeah. do this.
He was incredible. He was incredible in the game he got hurt. It was exactly like he was taking the dribble and leaning in and taking a shot. Yeah, it was great.
He's getting back to that. So the question is, to me, now they got to figure out who that is. You know what you're seeing as a result. You're seeing a lot of Damian Lee because that other person has to be somebody who could stick the shot. Like, that's Klay's role. That's what he does. So if he's the creator, there's just not enough space. So it is going to impact. But, you know, Steph said this would happen, right? He divided the season into three parts. This is the part where they get Klay adjusted. And this is why it was fortuitous for them to build the huge record advantage, right? Because the moment was coming where they had to figure out Klay. And to a lesser degree, it's still coming when they have to figure out Wiseman.
And when Draymond comes back with Klay.
Yeah, and the Draymond, I put that in there for sure, too.
Yeah, well, but the thing is, we all knew there was going to be a reintegration process, but he's playing differently than we thought he was going to play. And that changes things, too. And the fact, look, again, I don't want to be the one going on this like, hey, you know, Klay Thompson's not playing that well.
Man, so we were throwing strays at Looney and Bielitsa. Slater straight is at Klay Thompson. Like,
come on. I mean, I'm just, look, this is a fact right now. These are two facts. These are two facts. I understand, like, all the context around him. He has a usage rate of 32.5, and he is shooting 37%. Those are just two stats. I don't expect that to continue, but if it does, that's not good. That's not healthy for an offense. That's all.
Let's see how, as the minutes tick up, how that works. Let's see if the shot starts falling.
Let's see how it goes against some of these bad teams.
Yeah,
they got
exactly.
Lined up, right?
No question. And also, I'm curious, when the minutes tick up, is he going to play on the second unit? Because, you know, we know historically he has to get another weapon when Steph's off the floor. So Jordan Poole, is there going to be a Jordan Poole Klay chemistry? We have no idea on that. No idea. And is there going to be, like, what's that second unit going to look like? Because is Klay going to have a Steph minutes and second unit minutes? Or is he going to just be Steph? I don't know. My sense is he will not have many second unit minutes. Why? Because they need Wiggins out there with him to guard the other guys, best guy. That used to be Clay's role, and now it's Wiggins. And I don't think they necessarily really want Klay going against, you know, James Harden or whoever, you know, one of those guys. So I'm not sure. The defense, we haven't talked about that. And the defense gets praised, and I think it has been good, and he's been tough. I don't think he's going to – he's, you know, he was fine guarding D'Angelo Russell a couple games ago when I asked Kerr about it, and he mentioned it's because they obviously wanted Wiggins on Anthony Edwards. But I don't think defense has been great, and I don't want to criticize him, but, you know, he just – that reaction time, he doesn't have it. Like, he can be tough. He can be – have the right angle. He has actually been – you know, he's reached in there a ton, I think even more than usual, like fighting for the ball. But, like, that quick lateral – like just quick turn to make sure that you're not somebody doesn't turn a corner on you. Doesn't really have that, nor should he. Should he be expected to, but was incredibly valuable to them. I bet you 95% of his minutes have come with Andrew Wiggins on the floor with him. Like, it just Wiggins just guards that other guy, Gary Payton II. But I don't think they've even done Gary Payton. Like, Payton's coming in for Clay, so it has. But yeah, he would need somebody like that.
The Memphis game's a good example, right? Especially because Wiggins couldn't handle Ja. But it was like, it wasn't like, oh, Wiggins can't handle Ja, all right, Clay, take him. It was like, okay, get Gary Payton in the game.
Absolutely. And again, it's a lot to ask because, as Slater forgot last night, he has coming off a torn Achilles and a torn ACL.
And 2 years off.
And 2 years off. Slater had no perception of that and completely misled the
people.
You
know, sir, you had your comeback. It was a fantastic sports story, human interest story, but I'm here looking at data. I'm covering a basketball team, and you're now a big part of this basketball team.
We're living in the real world here. All that crying over that was all good.
Honeymoon is over. It's time to answer the tough
Have you seen that power gif of, like, when Ghost is waking up his son? Sleepy time's over. Sleepy time's
over. The Warriors are 2-3 since you've come back. Whatever they are. I don't even know what they are. It's like,
that's hilarious.
Someone has to be accountable for that, Clay Thompson.
So. Somebody's got to stand up. Yeah.
I'm just looking at your usage rate and your field goal percentage. That's all.
And I'm thinking Moses Moody. I mean, is that an option here?
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I wonder, do you think Kerr keeps him out of the second unit just to give Poole, like, his space and freedom? Or because I don't know if Poole is that good without.
I think it would help Poole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, that's what Poole's suffering from. Other than obviously it's great to play with Steph. We all know that. But, like, he's like the only guy. Like, he's got a bunch of guys who are passing it to him. And, you know, whether it's JTA or Iguodala, or, I mean, we just know those guys, and they're going to be great in a lot of other ways, but they're not going to, like, 6 seconds left the shot clock, they're going to top a tail, like, get the ball over to Jordan and go do something, Jordan. So I think he could use another scorer. I don't know. I thought it was going to be Kuminga. Like, I thought that would be an interesting, you know, even throw Wiseman out there, and then you got all kinds of offensive options. But it doesn't feel like that. Wiggins isn't, like, Wiggins, they're kind of keeping.
But Wiggins is, yeah, but he's durable. He could do both.
He's going to play 42 minutes.
Yeah, he could do both. Yeah,
it's been interesting because you look at that second unit. It's been Bielitsa, Porter, Poole, you know, often JTA, sometimes GP2. It's that mix. And Porter has been amazing. I mean, he's not an initiator. So it's just been kind of Jordan, go do your thing. And if you can't get four baskets, they're going to get clobbered in those minutes. If you get four baskets, they're going to do great. It's just been a little tough. It's a little strangled. So that's why I thought it could be Kuminga. It does not appear to be that way. And Clay, I would be intrigued to see if they do put Clay there or if not. I don't know. I think Poole could use another weapon out there with him.
Yeah, remember, I mean, this is what me and Marcus wrote a few weeks back as we were setting up the Poole dissension to the sixth man. Like, just a lot of it is, like, this is going to be a tougher life for him at an age where, again, as we said, this is the supposed to be the ascending time for Jordan Poole. So it's not only, obviously, like, there's different mixes that might help him, but he's also just going to have to accept this, like, minimized role. And we'll see how he accepts it.
But even when he was at his best, what we said, what was his ceiling? It's a great sixth man. I mean, he's not a good starting.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've changed my opinion on that. Where, like, if you put him in Orlando, wherever right now, I think he'd be a really solid, you know, starter. Like, you know, I would like to see the efficiency numbers, but, you know, I watched him in Detroit. No Steph, no Draymond. They rolled the ball out. He went and just beat the Pistons, scored 32, looked great. Like. And, like, you know, we've talked about the work ethic. I think his career's going to a pretty good place.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be worse. He's going to get better just because of
He puts into it. And he's I like the size. I'm not criticizing that. I'm just saying for a championship team, and which the Warriors hope to be for 5 more years or 10 more years or how many more years, I think he's a sixth man. I mean, or if he starts, it's not as the number one total offensive featured guy. I think he's a guy who gets you 22 minutes and who blows up 2 out of every 4 games, you know, 3 out of every 7.
The thing that would make it more difficult for him to accept that, though, I would think, is, like, he just was the starting 2 guard for the best team in basketball the first half of the season. Like, he was the starter for the best team in basketball and looked
and
like a championship.
And he's heading into
team.
An extension offseason.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Again, I feel like I'm being way too mean in this, but when Rodney Magruder was going off last night, who was defending him? It's Jordan Poole. Like, there's issues.
Looked like nobody.
Yeah,
to me,
Jordan
actually.
Poole, because he was not actually on him.
Looked like he was wide open.
I don't think he's playing as well now because I think he's just, like, lost in the mix, and that's what happens. Like, you know, suddenly it's like, okay, I'm a mop-up duty guy now. I'm not gonna go out there and, like, defend Rodney Magruder with this, like, you know, verve that I was defending the Clippers to open this game on TNT when I was considered the starting 2 guard, the most improved player candidate. Like, that's egos in locker rooms and in all business. I just, like, to me, it's just something to monitor. Like, I just, like, it'll just be interesting where it goes from here.
And he's really talented. I don't want, like, let's keep that on. Like, he's very, very talented. And he might win a playoff game for them. Like, they, you know, they haven't had a bench player. You can say that. Like, this guy might just go out and win a game for us, you know, in a Lou Williams sort of way. But
sounds like Reggie Jackson, OKC. I saw it with my own eyes. He won him a playoff game, a big one.
And that is very, very valuable. But also, you know me, I think six men like that are overrated. Because you see them shoot, and yet there's a reason why they don't play 35 minutes of games, because they don't do a bunch of other stuff. But yet, that one thing they do can win you a game. I don't want to dispute that. We'll see. We'll see how Wiseman, if he does like that, could change the mix of the second unit. All these different things are being felt out. But I asked her before the game, like, did you start to, like, really start shuffling the rotation that we've been talking about all year? You know, we know with Draymond out, it's tougher, but he was, yes, he said, we had started to do that, and now how do we kind of redo it again because Draymond's out. But I think we're seeing what it is, and it's JTA essentially shuffled out of the rotation. He's playing now because Draymond's out, and it's Bielitsa's minutes going down, it's Poole's minutes going down, and it's Damian Lee's light. I mean, his minutes haven't gone down yet, but you can see that is coming. Those three guys are the ones where you, I think, are really going to see where the minutes go down, just because they can't play 12, 13 guys. They're going to play 10, and in playoffs, you can play 9. It's realities, and, you know, it's tough on guys. These are good guys who played well, played hard. They're going to have roles. You can just see it just by looking at the minutes. And there's more coming. And there's more coming, right? Wiseman. And
I just saw this message from Sharon in the chat. That's funny. But like, she's typing in the chat. Yeah,
like, we were going to put her on. We're going to put her on. I don't know what happened. Her angry father refused to let her go on the show.
Slater, guess what happened in this game against Detroit? And it hadn't happened in a very long time.
Kevon Looney got 8 first quarter rebounds.
No, that wasn't at all revelatory, considering he's the best rebounder in the league, even if Tim Kawakami hates him.
He's been rebounding like crazy.
Steph Curry made more than half his shots.
And half his three-pointers, I think, maybe, right about?
And half his three-pointers, yeah. He had done that like once or twice, but the last time Steph made half his shots was, geez, I'm going way back here. Oh, we're not that far back. It was the home game against Memphis. Right before Christmas.
Before Christmas, huh?
Yeah, before Christmas, when he had like 46 against Memphis, that was the last time he made half his shots. So, you know, a nice little span. Again, I don't know how much of a thing it was to do against that Detroit defense last night, but for Steph, seeing shots go in, it's got to be a little bit something. He hit one shot from the corner and just stood there. Because he had missed a wide open three from the wing, and this one was wide open, so he just stood there and then raised both fists in the air in celebration because he made a wide open shot. Whenever he gets going, that's what it'll be, because he developed a rhythm in a game like this. And I'm wondering, do you think this is the beginning of that?
You know, he actually, the stats weren't spectacular, but he had a pretty good game in Chicago, and I even like kind of asked him, like, do you feel like this is maybe leaning back the other way? And you could tell he was like, he's not about to, I think he had like 21 points, so he's not about to be like, you know, what a breakout night. But I think he felt good about how he played against the Bulls. And then, you know, he had the hands thing, so he missed the Minnesota trip, but I think that was probably good too. They sent him back home to his family for a few days. And even last night, he jams the finger. So, like, you know, we got to monitor the physical nature of how he's looking. But I think he's starting to feel a little bit better about his offensive game. That's all.
I thought he looked good last night. I really liked it good. And just working off the action and not forcing stuff, I think that's what he pushes back against. He just doesn't want to force stuff. And then he feels like he has to force stuff because he hasn't put up a shot in a while. And he has to shoot the three to remain the weapon that he is in order for everyone else to get the action. And I just think, and it's because Clay got hot, he could just feel it within the rhythm of what they're doing. And, you know, it is magic when those two guys get going, and it's just part of what they feed off each other. And it hadn't happened, and there it was. And I think maybe Steph was like anticipating it or trying to force it or waiting for Steph. You know, it just, you could feel or sense a lot of these factors that are all trying to get the record. Like all these things we talk about, we probably talk about them over much in the Warriors universe because we're looking at every little thing with Steph. But I do think within the natural context of what he and Clay do, and you put Draymond back in it, we're going to see those percentages go up. I've assumed the percentages are going to go up for a month now, and they haven't. They've gone down. But I think it's just going to be within the stuff that they do. It's we've seen it. He's 42% three-point shooter. That's what he is. He's not a 38% three-point shooter. And then he can go weeks where he's a 45% three-pointer. He's 48%, 52% three-point shooter. And just, we just haven't seen that. I just think it's just have to work through all these things in his head, figure it all out. He's, you know, very obviously, like, he thinks this stuff through, and he's had to think it through. And you know, now they got this nice stretch against Indiana. I don't think it's going to be overly difficult for them to figure it out. Houston's not going to certainly be overly difficult. Like, they're going to have these stretches where they can just work stuff out, where they don't have to think, oh my God, what are we going to do against Memphis overplaying? Like, they don't have to think that. They have to, like, just do their stuff, and they're going to win these games. And that's, and again, having predicted that he was going to get hot for a month and been wrong, I can still say I think we're going to see him get to that. I mean, he's got it. Steph Curry's got to be over 40% three. Like, Steph Curry, how are you under 40% 3-point shooting? And I realize the NBA average is 35, but he's Steph Curry, the greatest 3-point shooter of all time. It's just bizarre to see him at 38 or whatever he is right now. It's 38-7, I bet, something like that.
It kind of reminds me, remember, speaking of Chicago, when Klay was shooting so terribly, and then he hit like 14 threes in Chicago. But we kept saying, like, all right, you know, don't want to panic about Klay. Don't want to panic about it. Hey, Klay's struggling. It got so bad, he got mad.
That was also like game 7 of the season, though. This is game 40. It was, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he was shooting terribly, though. He was shooting bad. It just reminds me of that, where it was like, all right, this is getting a little uncomfortable. Like, how at some point, we got to start talking about what's wrong with this guy.
Well, Tim alluded to it. I, like, tried to kind of delicately ask him in Milwaukee.
38-6, yep. 38-6. And that brings him down to 43% for his career.
I was talking to Kerr about this in Minnesota, and he was like, you know, 38, man. I was saying that. He's like, that's really good. Like, you know, that is a fantastic three-point shooter in the league. It's a 38% three-point shooter.
At that volume.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, that's Damian Lillard's career. Like, you know, basically.
And he's still shooting better than Bielitsa.
Oh, no.
Jesus. My God. It's a one-man rant.
What do you guys think Damian Lillard's career three-point percentage is?
37.5.
36.
I'm going right now. I'm guessing myself. It's 37.3. So this is, you know, better again, than Damian Lillard's career.
No question. And the NBA average, again, is like 35. And we get it. And you're putting up a volume. And you're incredibly valuable, even if you're missing it, because it creates other shots for your teammates that they otherwise wouldn't get. But he's Steph Curry because he's shooting 43, right? That's why he's Steph Curry. That's why you're great. That's your number. You put it on your basketball card. And this is why everyone loves Steph Curry and that he's so valuable. It's because it is 42, 43. And it's not just, you know, like, you feel the difference, right? You feel the difference between 38 and 43. Like, you can just tell. It isn't one shot a game, although I guess statistically it might come down to that. It's the feeling. It's the sense of where this is going. I get it. But, like, this is a career low. This is, you know, not even close to one of, you know, it's his worst shooting season so far in his career. Easily can get out of it, and almost certainly will. But that's why I say, like, I get it, 38, you put it against everyone else. What's Harden? Like, Harden's probably, you know, right in there, 39 to 40, maybe.
I bet he's like 35.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's still a very good percentage. We've seen it. He's still incredibly valuable, even in the stretch that it's been a little funky. The reason why we talk about him like this is because it's been 42, 43, sometimes stretches of 50. You know,
what has always made him, you know, different from Damian Lillard, from the other guys.
Yes, yes. And that's why you're fine with him taking any three he wants, because there's a chance that every single one of them is going in. But what did he shoot? Like, last year, the end, like the last 20 games, he was like, what, 49 from three? It was ridiculous.
Yeah, again, like, it was that April month after the tailbone. I think he made 96 threes in 15 games, which was by far the most ever in a calendar month.
That's why we talk about him. That's why he is who he is. You don't rip him for a two-month period where it's not the same. But you point it out. It's fair to point it out. And
you're telling me, you know, I can point out usage rates and shooting percentages.
Slater's gonna,
I mean, not him after a guy's out for 2.5 years. Jeez, Slater, give him some time to breathe.
No time here. I'm gonna
monitor
world.
This Klay Slater situation here. I'm gonna monitor this.
Hey, he didn't have to do that, though. He knew what
he
could
do.
Yeah. Come on, Klay.
You know what? He could do whatever he wants.
He can do whatever he wants.
It's a
good answer. Absolutely.
Yeah,
That's all that matters. That's all that matters. Just like, is it something that tells us, that informs us where his head's at, where the team's at? Absolutely. So you take that, having been someone who gets people snapping at me, and say, like, I don't care if you're snapping, as long as the words I can put in my story are good. And that was fine. And it's the competitive nature of Klay that I think, like, it isn't always portrayed, and we don't always see. And that guy's damn, he just wants to kill people. He just does. He wants to beat them, bust their ass on the basketball court. And he hasn't been able to for 2 years. And that's why it felt so great for him to get back in. That's why last night hitting that three was great. And, you know, if he's got to knock down Slater a couple times afterwards, that's fine too. It's all part of the deal. And it's good. It's like, this is going to be fun when they get to the playoffs. This is all going to be great again to cover, to watch, to be entertained by. and this is what he needs to work through, and he's getting through it. And Slater's going to be
Slater, the one for the team.
Slater's going to have to be set him up for it, but it's all good.
Gladly. All right, Warriors 2.5 out of first behind Phoenix. Two up on Grizzlies for the third seed. It's going to be interesting the second half to the season.
How important do you think the seeding is for the Warriors? Like, what's the lowest you think would be comfortable for them to get, and how important is it would it be for them like to play?
Just,
for the
I think if they're top four.
Yeah, like, do you think they should play for the one?
Stay on this top side of the bracket. If I was them, I would probably suggest staying in the 2-3 so you don't have to play Phoenix round two. But right now, the, you know, Memphis has actually hopped Utah. Memphis is the three. So, you know, early in the season, it was much better to be the one than the 2-3 because the thought was if you get the one, you don't have to play both of the other two because we kind of viewed it as a three-team conference. I don't know where you guys were at. Like, do you view it as a four-team conference now? Where, like, is Memphis?
Three-team.
Are you including
Utah
Memphis?
Out. Yeah, Utah's out.
Utah's going to come in Sunday and have something to say about that right in front of your face.
I think it's Phoenix, Warriors, Memphis. I've been touting Memphis all season long, and some might laugh at me. But
Tim, I believe Memphis I actually saw you next to John Morant's dad when I was in Memphis singing, "We Don't Bluff, We Don't Bluff."
It was me and Hollinger. It was me and Hollinger at the Blue City Cafe.
I love when that arena gets going. I've covered a couple like great playoff series there, and it was like feeling a little bit old school, like grit and grind. Like, or not like they play differently than that team, but the arena, that city's really into that team and into Ja Morant, and like that's gonna be a difficult road place to play.
There's an OKC feel to that. They got Steven Adams now, so it's really OKC feel like. I just like Memphis. I just like the way that team is put together. I think they are tough for the Warriors to play. I think they're tough for anybody. Now they're really stacking wins together. Ja Morant is a really nice closer. So I've been saying it for a while. I think the Warriors would just not want to see them the first two rounds if they could. Not avoiding it. I'm just saying they just don't want that. I think Utah would be just fine for them. Just fine for them in a first round or a second round. Phoenix is really good, no question. But I think Memphis is a true challenge for anybody.
You think Memphis is the best team in the West, huh?
I don't think they're the best team in the West. I think they're really tough, though. I've always thought that this season. I thought that a little bit last season. I watched that play-in game. Like, I mean, like, that was a tough team, and they didn't even play that great. And they beat the Warriors on the Warriors court when the Warriors were hot. Obviously, not at full strength, but when the Warriors were hot, the Warriors were not. I mean, they played the Lakers great the game before, and we can all make our conclusions by the Lakers, but the Lakers still had LeBron and Anthony Davis, and they played them great, and they probably should have beat the Lakers in LA.
I think Memphis is still a player away, but a trade deadline is coming up. They have a bunch of first-round picks, including two other picks. That one of those is the Warriors 2024 pick. They have the Warriors first-round pick from the Iguodala salary dump. So that, you know, maybe there's some people out there that are like, is it time for Memphis to go all in? Because, they, you know, maybe they're pushing towards contender status. So I don't yet fear, like, if I'm one of the top teams in the West, the Warriors, Phoenix, I think Utah I would have above Memphis. I don't necessarily fear them as much yet, but they add somebody over the next month, that could change.
They got people. So we'll see. I just think, I don't think the Warriors need to play for one, but I don't know if I'd want to get a lot lower than 2-3. I think 3 is a decent spot for them. I just don't think, you just don't want to absorbing all the losses it would take to get them to 4-5. It just would be bad for them, for the mentality, I think. And I think 2-3 is a fine spot. I think 1's still very possible. And Phoenix might slow up a little bit, but I just think 55 wins, you know, try to get whatever 55 wins gets you. Feel that confidence, get guys rested, don't push everybody. But I also think you don't want to get, you know, what were they? Were they a 3 like when Durant's final year, something like that? I mean, they were throwing away games left and right back then. Obviously, you understood why, but I don't think they want to quite do. I think they want to get to 55, 57, something like that.
Durant's first season, they 67 wins, they were 1. But then Houston, that next season went crazy, and then that's when they started really kind of taking the regular season less seriously.
Yeah. And you understood. I mean, they had Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. Like, I mean, all those things are understandable. I think this season you want to stay 1-2-3, and I think 2 might be the better spot for them, just to make sure, you know, they don't screw around with some home court stuff.
Yeah, and you know, the first round matters. If you're 2 right now, you're playing the winner of a Wolves Lakers play in. Although, you know, say what you want about the Lakers. But if you're 4, for example, you're playing Dallas in the first round. Dallas is playing pretty well.
I mean, I think they beat Denver no matter what, but you might want to avoid Denver if everyone gets healthy at the end of the season.
Denver's tough,
yeah,
man.
Denver is going to be tricky. Yeah. They're going to be like a tricky 6 or whatever the hell they end up as. And
maybe with Jamal Murray, by the way.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, like, if you just, the higher you get, and I think one thing is bearing out about this Warriors team, they are a great home court team. Like, they are really good at Chase Center. And this is just like that matters maybe this season. Like, they just want to get game 7 or game 1 at home. And just, you know, that might be the difference in a series. So we shall see. And, you know, if Clay's great, it might not matter. Let's blow through everybody. But we don't know that yet.
All right, that'll do it for this week. We will catch you next week during the homestand. We'll see how this shapes out. But no Draymond. Kuminga is your starting power forward for the foreseeable future. And Clay and Steph looking like they're getting their groove back. So next time we'll have a lot more to talk about. But thanks for rocking with us for a week. We are out of here.